Oh yeah, this is the Council Connect. I'm your host, Baby and Vix, and on this episode, we are going to give some brief thoughts on the GSA conference. Of course, we're going to have Caroline and Steve on this episode to talk about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and Moon Knight, and geek out on comic book movies and talk about everything about the movie and tying in the council like we usually do. Some big news I want to go ahead and share with you all. Myself, Kimberly Bryan, Tara Washington will be presenting at ASCA. In 2023, be ready. We're presenting on Sunday at 3:30 in the afternoon, so it's early in the conference, so it's not late. I believe it's 3:30. I'll check the time again. It might change. Don't know. We'll see. But I just wanted to go ahead and get that news out while it's fresh in my mind. Question part of the show, I say, let's go. Okay, so I went to the GSA conference this year in Savannah. This is the makeup date from 2020, from the pandemic year. Always loved Savannah. Went there for my honeymoon with my wife. It's a special place to us. And Savannah did not disappoint, of course. We stayed at the Hyatt Hotel right on the Riverwalk. Nice hotel. You're right by all the action. Very different places to eat at. I forgot the name of the place where we ate at, but some good food. Great experience coming back there. Just the fact that it was warm 1 minute and turned freezing cold that same first night triggered me a little bit. I was freezing cold for the rest of the time there. I had to get my car out of ballet just to get my coat. That's how cold it was, because I wasn't expecting it to be that cold that fast. There was a tropical storm that was coming in that night and that next day, and it changed the weather for the whole conference. But other than the weather changing and the rain on the last day we were pulling out and leaving, it was a good conference. I was able to see a lot of my council friends and friends I haven't seen in a little bit. Seen a few of them at ASCA. I've seen some of my old council friends from Bibb County since the conference last year, and it's great to reconnect with them. Networking with a lot of different counselors and coordinators and that such, and just picking their brain on things they need for their district as far as advocating for their program, advocating for their profession, advocating for themselves, their students, their stakeholders, so forth and so on. But all in all, GSA always does a good conference. It's very well done by Madam President Laura Ross. Shout out to her for a job well done for the conference this year, as well as the things in her vision that she had set for this school year for counselors to have done for this year. It's just great to see everybody happy to be together in Savannah, having a good time and enjoying themselves and becoming better versions of themselves for their kids at their school. Can't wait to next year. It's in Augusta next year, and then the following year after that, it'll be in Savannah. Again, just an awesome experience getting to go to GSA as usual. Hopefully I'll be able to present next year. Great conference. Hopefully be back next year. We'll be right back with Steve and Caroline right after this.
And this is the Counseling Connection. I am your host, Fabian Vicks. And I have two great friends of mine who are about to geek out with me on some comic book movies and comic book TV shows. Caroline Lopez Perry and Steve Sharp. People, how are we doing? People, how are we doing?
Excellent.
Doing well, Mr. Vicks, Dr. Lopez Perry. Always a pleasure.
I feel like I should, like, you know.
For those that's listening to the audio of this podcast, we're doing the telekinesis sign. Am I saying it? The
telekinesis sign.
Yeah.
Which is actually Mayan in nature. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to do some homework before class.
Look at you being very studious. Very studious.
Yeah. I was a homework kid. No, I wasn't.
Me neither. We're not going to talk about my high school days.
Yeah, I don't think this podcast is that long. I don't think we're going to go there yet.
Nah, not that long. This is the episode y'all been waiting for. We've been advertising it for a couple months, waiting for Black Panther to come out before we recorded this episode, and we've all seen it, I'm assuming, correct?
What's this?
Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. So making sure we...
About California civil rights?
Not in California. This is the much anticipated sequel to Black Panther. Originally supposed to, should have came out 2021, but of course Chadwick Boseman passed away in 2020. The script was dumped and rewritten. The original script was supposed to be with Chadwick dealing with life after the snap, but they made a left turn with Namor, which is a very comic book move right there, which I enjoyed the movie. We're going to get into Namor's character. Namor's character a little bit later on. But what were your initial thoughts? I'm going to start with Caroline and Steve. What were your initial thoughts on the movie?
I had to sit with it for a little bit right after, but I think it was really well done given everything that, you know, what you just discussed, right? That they had to scrap the original script and everything that happened. I think it was, you got to sit in their grief with them. And that was really how he did that, Coogler did that, and allowed you to sit with them in that as they experienced it, both right off screen, but then on screen, was really moving, I would say.
Yeah, bring tissues. It was, I don't, like, I will see Wakanda Forever again. I will likely buy it on Blu-ray. Even though I won't open the Blu-ray because I'll just watch on Disney Plus inevitably in the same way. But it's like in a special class of movie with like Schindler's List and Hotel Rwanda of things that are like really great and really beautiful and really hard to watch. For so many reasons that I love the first film, I love Wakanda Forever in very different ways. And it's one of those things where, like, I know we were joking about homework before, but like clearly Ryan Coogler and the cast understood the homework assignment and very painfully did it perfectly.
They did. And we're gonna go through the movie and we might jump around a little bit, but before we get into the movie, for those that have not seen this movie and listen to my podcast, just turn off my podcast, go watch the movie, and then turn back on the podcast. I'll tell you that now.
Just in effort of, again, being fair and speaking to the nerd code, spoiler alert probably.
Yes.
Plenty of spoilers. So
definitely.
You had 2 weeks. That's all I'm saying. You had 2 weeks. I think, Steve, you went to see it on Thursday.
Yeah, I saw it opening night.
Right. Caroline, when did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it that night. I didn't plan on it, but I was getting a little FOMO, and so last minute we went.
Me and my family, wife's brother, his family, and wife's dad, we all saw it on that Sunday. It was deeper than It was thick and thick. It was almost Coachella in it for folks trying to watch it. So I'm not comparing Coachella to Wakanda Forever, but it was so many people in there just ready to watch. I think they had it on so many screens. It was ridiculous. I mean, just from that aspect. But to your point, we're sitting in the reef. We start off the movie with Shuri trying to find a cure for her brother. And the beauty of the movie is they kept the illness as an illness and didn't reveal what the true illness was. It could have been COVID, but on Wakanda, it's a closed-in country. So it could have played into COVID. It could have played, but that we knew kind of feel it was cancer, which we knew was what he dealt with. And when he died, the ceremony where they had the funeral, all white, was beautiful. The coffin, the ceremonial coffin being taken up into one of the jets, the billboard with the translation. I got to look up the translation where they say it was a immediate tribute to him.
It's like, hail to the king, the Black Panther, he shall live forever, or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. I mean, like, really is, like, the two different parts that is clearly for a movie about grief and loss, particularly coming off the pandemic. It speaks very well to grief and loss in very specific ways, like as you watch the film, I really question how much like Angela Bassett and Letitia are acting sometimes and how much they are just grieving. Then also at the same point, you know, like really in those first scenes, like Black Panther was so beautiful because it creates just this amazing, rich world just with taking very direct nods to, I think, like the breadth and the depth of African culture. And in ways that we were able to celebrate and film that wasn't present before. And now in this funeral procession, which is meant to be a celebration, they take all that away at the same time and just lay it dangling in front of us. That, I mean, it really speaks to like the grief experience, I think. Because like so often, like people get stuck in the loss, but the loss isn't just like loss, it's loss of all those great and meaningful and powerful experiences that have been part of that story the whole time through.
And I like that they didn't, you know, come up with their own storyline of what it was, because I think, again, it allowed the audience to sit with them and everything that they've experienced, right? Like, we don't need to name it. You all know what's happened. And so it kind of crossed the line of film into like we all know, right? We went through that experience together. And
yeah, like the one part I think about too is like as a very devout nerd, as I think as an advocate in many different ways of equity, and then in addition to that, as like someone who aspires to and calls myself a futurist sometimes when I've had too many drinks. Like Afrofuturism, like it came to the center with the first like Black Panther film. I think like one thing that I take from it and just fold into like my work is like, how are we actually working with our students, working with our colleagues to imagine a future for Black and Brown people? And like really for the Black Lives Matter movement, like when they're like, as this decentralized group was getting started, like they put on like Instagram, like writing prompts and stuff like that. Like, what if Black lives really matter? And like what Black lives really matter, we would have space to grieve. And I think that's something that was very present in this film.
And another thing about the movie, what I was very proud of was this movie, of course, when Black Panther came out, Afrofuturism, but the combination of Black and Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Just having those two cultures together just made me think like, this is another level that Ryan Coogler and Kevin Feige and just putting it all together where the majority of cast is Black and Brown. You, of course, had, spoiler alert, Julie Louise Dreyfus and Richard Schiff, who's Secretary of State, who takes over for Thunderbolt Ross, which I will have a thought on that after I saw some from New Rock Stars. Just just looking at the different cultures, we already knew about Wakanda from the first movie. Then you get to see Talokan, which is a, I guess, the Mayan form of Atlantis. It's a changeover from the comic, which is a good change to me, which fit the style of the movie and the demographic in it. It was a very perfect fit. And we barely scratched the surface with what Talokan has to offer, because there was a line in the movie when Namor pulls up on the beach with Ramonda and Shuri and says, I have more soldiers than you have blades of grass. So I'm thinking like, what? Like, but just by the black and brown combination of those two different cultures, and I want to go ahead and merge into how those two same communities have the same plight, where Talokan had conquistadors come in and bring smallpox and different diseases and death and rampage and all that type of stuff. And of course,
happy Thanksgiving, y'all.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
This is not for the faint of heart, because we're gonna get real on here. They also, of course, had Wakanda, who shielded themselves from the colonizers. So we had the colonizers and the conquistadors, which basically forced two countries or populations to isolate themselves from the work, from possible destabilization, which will probably come up in the Thunderbolts movie, which is going to be later. But tell me about, I want to go start with Namor. I cannot remember his, Huerta? No, Huerta is the last name.
Watch Huerta.
Yeah. Huerta played Namor. Played the role beautifully. Had some comedy, some seriousness, and he's a calm crazy to me. He has a calm craziness.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all want to elaborate on that? Because to me, he was a calm crazy in that movie.
Yeah. I was a little bit familiar with him beforehand, but I mean, technically has been a strong anti-racist advocate for more brown representation in the entertainment industry for years. So I think that ferocity and that representation, I think really matters. I think I know the Griot did a piece, which is like, I have sinned for I don't love Wakanda forever. And I reading the piece, it was kind of disingenuous in my reading, because one thing that they felt was the conflict between black and brown bodies was just, the focus shouldn't have been there, because really we should be working in solidarity. And I felt for a 100 level class, but really what we're seeing is more so the story that I think was told, is that the most powerful entities in the MCU, as far as global nations, are Wakanda and the not Atlanteans, and these are black and brown bodies that are disinterested in the colonizers and their influence. That is a secondary conflict that I found was a more powerful story. But yeah, I'm curious on other thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think I forgot the original question. I think I love that Ryan Coogler did what he did. He didn't have to, right? He didn't have to go this route. He could have stayed with the original Atlanteans and the original comic book storyline. But I like this spin that he took with it. I love Namor. He is the epitome of F around and find out. He warns you in advance. If this is what you do, this is what will happen.
You have 7 days to bury your. You have 7 days
to bury,
and I'm gonna pull back up again.
If
Pull Up was a person, he's Pull Up.
Yes. He will go from 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah. So I mean, the pace that came too. I mean, I like that there was just an underlying tension of what, as the clock is ticking down, what is going to happen. I think it paid off in the end too. And then it's this mutual sadness, because clearly they're looking just to have each of their individual nations just have the solitude. And then I wish that the forced conflict didn't exist, but clearly that is a place where it blew up then, because it's a movie, so it has to be interesting.
Right. Yeah. I think he did a great job. So he was in Narcos before. I don't know if you all watch Narcos. So he was in Narcos, but I think I was pretty impressed seeing him in Wakanda Forever and just acting right alongside Angela Bassett, who is like a queen, right?
He was in scenes with Angela Bassett, but there's no acting along with Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
She chewed up the scenery and spit it out. Not best and supporting actress by all school counselors we voted on earlier.
Yeah, but I think he did a great job along. I mean, it's Angela Bassett, right? Like, how do you act along, like, standing next to her? And I think he did a pretty good job holding his own, so.
And that's the fun part about Marvel, because we're going to see him, we should be seeing more of him. We don't know where he's going to come up. We don't know if he's going to be in Secret Wars, Kang Dynasty. He might have a part in Quantumania. We do not know. We just know he's here. And that's gonna be the fun part. We don't know if could be a couple different things. Could be working with Dr. Doom. We don't know. There's a rumor that Dr. Doom was pulled. I had a scene in the movie that got pulled out. But I want to dive into the grief part of the movie. Let's go to the grief part of the movie. We talked about of course, he died. They played the death at the very beginning of the movie. We sat in the grief. Angela's still hurting from her son's death when she's talking to the United Nations, and the Dora Milaje stopped France pretty much from stealing vibranium from an outreach post. Fast forward just a little bit more to where Shuri is kidnapped, not kidnapped, she voluntarily went with Namor to Talokan. And you could tell her hurt from Chadwick dying and her husband's death 7 years in Marvel time previously is still hurting her. And we have that. We have Namor dealing with 400 years of having to be underwater. We have Shuri that's dealing with the brother's death and her father's death and coming back from the snap and still adjusting from the snap. Which led to a phrase that y'all probably heard before, hurt people hurt people. We dealt with the grief and hurt people until they realize we got to stop hurting each other because we have a common enemy besides what we're dealing with here. This is trivial going to dealing with the other superpowers trying to take vibranium and take over, destabilize our countries. And when we talk about deal grief, that 5-6 stages or whatever, and you can see it plainly throughout the movie, the different stages of bargaining and denial. Everything you can think of with those different stages, with Shuri throwing herself into work, still trying to find a cure for what happened with her brother. She's still in denial, even before he died. That was a part of grief right there, but she's trying to find a synthetic antidote for him to survive. What can we, as school counselors, how can we help those that are grieving process those different stages of grief? You want y'all to jump in?
You know,
it's a loaded question, so.
Yeah, you know, like when we talk about, like, even through the lens of the movie, like the trigger of grief when it comes to Namor losing his mother and then for Shuri losing her brother, like, both of them are on a parallel trip where it's not like she wants to set the world on fire because she could do that because she has that control. Like he is trying to be preemptive with a strike against the world by pulling in, by making a partnership or war with Wakanda its only real threat because he can control that. And what we understand is, like, when we lose people that are very important to us, like that loss of control, we try and steal that back in whatever ways we can, but like whatever control we have is not the same as the person we lost. Like we understand like our relationships that we have with everyone is important. So they're very real, but the things that are the most real aspects of our relationships are the things that are the memories. They are the experiences. They are the values that we carry forward. And like Shuri finds that in the closing scenes of the movie, And like one of the work that we do as school counselors is like, we get to know the secret. Like, you don't have to wait till the end of your movie. You don't have to wait until the third act. Like, we can provide you with the skills and the chance to make those connections with the living people around you. That's one piece that resonates with me in the movie, which is like yes, we got the punchline before we got to see them punch each other in the face, but it still is one part that, again, is so compelling as a counselor that I'll keep on coming back for more, whether it's in my office or in a movie theater.
Yeah, I think it was, what do you do with grief? Do you let it eat at you? How do you process that? And I think that was like one of the big questions for Shuri is, what do I do with this grief? And you see even her mother try and help her and give her space to process, or kind of reminds her, you need to deal with this at some point. And it's not till she's ready. It's really right when that person is ready to deal with it and process it. And there was just, the theme was just consistent along, right? Tenoch and losing, or, Nomar and losing his mother. And what did he do with that grief? What has he done with that grief? And the trauma, right? The re-traumatization of like, if he sees it's happening again, they're a threat again. And so that grief comes back. And what's his reaction to that? And then you have the, major spoiler, Michael B. Jordan popping up at the end, who also, right, in Black Panther Forever, how did he process his grief and the loss of his father and the loss of his own identity and being separated from his people? And so he kind of comes back as a kind of a reminder of what he did and how, in the ways he processed that. And so she had that choice of, what do I do with this grief at the end?
Yeah, when we were cresting the mountains of Wakanda and Black Panther Forever, the underlying message is, we're coming home, and you get to see all this wonder. And when you dive deep underneath and see the city of Talokan, it's still as a reminder of, these are all the people that Namor is afraid that he's going to lose at the same time. It's a different message. I think what's very resonant for me is just we see it happen, the narrative of our classrooms and school board meetings across the nation right now. People are either trying to scrape back of what they perceive is lost in our country, or instead of maybe embracing and create a new home for our students in front of us. And that's a real conflict that happens more than 180 days a year.
And add on to the grief of the movie, we spoiler alert, like I said, if you have not watched the movie, stop the podcast, go watch the movie, and then restart where we left off at.
Are you going to tell them about Thanos' dance scene? Oh, I'm sorry, spoiler.
My bad, I forgot. I forgot about that one. Queen Ramonda dies saving Riri, and that was a shock. I think that was a needed shock in the movie, but I could give you this part. My wife has always said she wanted to see a variant of Storm in this movie. We want to see that variant come out. I was hoping that somehow the mutant gene would somehow just come out of her when they were resuscitating her, and her eyes would turn white and they'd just start floating, but
nope.
I don't think they would. I think they didn't give it to us. I'll give it to my wife. She wanted it. She wanted that. I thought we were going to get that part, but that was just another, go ahead, Steve.
I have a theory, but let's wait till the end for that one.
Okay. And just thinking about, you lost your brother. You're almost killed on the bridge in Massachusetts. You're taken to Talokan. You're rescued. Namor almost Phoenix forced the Wakanda. And for comic book fans, Namor had the Phoenix Force and flooded Wakanda. For this movie, they didn't flood it like they could have. I thought it was going to be a total flood. That's why I was thinking, because in the trailers we saw so much water gush. I'm like, they're really flooding this thing. And I thought it was going to be completely done. But he showed grace to pull up with a person, like we said earlier. And you add on more grief when her mother dies, which means she had to bury her brother and her mother within a 2-week span. On top of her father being dead, 7 years, on top of a blip.
her mindset is, I want to burn it down, which brings in to what Caroline said with Killmonger, which was the person she saw in the astral plane. She didn't see her dad, she didn't see her brother, she didn't see her mother. She saw the person who was more similar to what she was thinking, which was a shock to me with seeing Killmonger. But I kind of feel like you got to bring him back somehow in the astral plane. But I ain't see it for as the same type of feeling she had that he had also, which is to hurt people. Wanting to hurt people, going back to hurt people, hurt people.
Yeah, I mean, like, when they have nothing left, how are they controlling the world around them that's took so much from them? That's something that we have to ask our kids in front of us every day. It's something like, again, like watching that, that's the place where it went from really hard to watch to being impossible to watch, just as someone who had built to love both of these characters and just saw the mutual pain. And like, I guess the question is, like, when does, like, what can we do at the same point? Like she takes all that energy to build a machine of war, and like at the end starts building something different on just the shores of the beach, spoiler. But like, I mean, like, how are we building something, imagining something that is different, and how do we plant that in? I don't know.
I think, you know, when we talk about students, I mean, there's so many parallels. The idea that, like, you know, there's this rush to go back to in person and we have to go back to normal. And so have we given our own students the time to process what they just went through, what they've gone through, and to process their grief? Because so many students have lost so much in so many ways. And I know there's always been discussion as of late as some of the behaviors that we see in school, right? And so are we giving our own students the space, or are we rushing them to keep going?
I think you want to go ahead, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, like, the reality is, like, not even like trying to do a deep dive into my week. I mean, like, we have students who have found dead parents or dead grandparents, or God forbid both, interacting with teachers who might have gone through comparable experiences, or like are just trying to interact with their students in their own failing bodies at that point. And they're just trying to get through another school day, not understanding each other's stories. And I think that's someplace where we can create that space. Like, it doesn't have to be by the riverside, like we have offices and faculty rooms and stale coffee and different ways. Like, our advocacy can be a tool of compassion. Our advocacy can be space to promote healing. And like, that's one thing where I think we are uniquely positioned, even things that frankly, like, we know, like our classrooms, our school board meetings, like, they have felt like sometimes they have been war zones over the past few years. And yet in our unique positions, I think we have a chance to help people to take all that hurt and all that energy to make something different.
Yeah, it just, I don't know about y'all. I know we're veering off a little bit from talking about the movie, but it's perilous, like Caroline said. It's just like, I still kind of think we rushed back a little bit, but I think that was by choice. I just, if we would have stayed hybrid, we're losing educators at an alarming rate. We still have, like, I remember back in during ASCA, I think Texas had so many open positions in July that weren't filled. I'm not saying anywhere else didn't, but I'm just saying Texas had one of the largest number of open positions that were still available at that time. And it's an unknown. A lot of, we look at boards of education, we're still doing schools the same. They need to do something different as far as go to a 4-day school week, Monday through Thursday or Tuesday through Friday, something like that, or do make asynchronous work on the work on a Monday or Tuesday through Friday, make Friday asynchronous, something different that's going to accommodate right now for students. Because like I said, we have students that found their parents, their grandparents, got teachers dealing with death, dealing with sickness, dealing with their own bodies. We still don't understand what COVID does to our body. And we still don't understand it. And we're plugging along like, well, we ready. We got a shot. We got three, four shots. We're going back to normal. But it's just something's going to have to just change as far as the mental health, the different positions. Do we need more social work? Do we need more psychologists in the building? Do we have funding for that? Are we going to have funding with this, especially with the split Congress coming into 2023? So many unknowns that we don't know just based off of a decision by somebody not to block folks coming in from not from handling this pandemic in January 2020 to now. So it's just... It's a terrible loss. It's terrible, and y'all spot on what y'all see.
But just politically speaking, I'm just gonna point out that California, PA, we did our parts. Where are you at, Georgia? No, I mean,
I don't know.
But, Raven, like when you're talking, you're so right, and like I think that's why this movie is so important. It's why Black Panther was so important. It's why some like I. Octavia Butler is so important. Like the reality is like so much of our imagination of what could be for our students, for what could be for education, it's deeply rooted in this Eurocentric colonial model from the 18th century. And like we have a chance to take just like Afrofuturism in itself is not just like Black sci-fi. What we're talking about is we can be inspired to imagine something different through the lens of music. We can be inspired and imagine something different through our fashion, through our film, through so much more to imagine a future where it can be better for everyone and Black and brown people being centered in that. And like, the reality is like, that's the trap, that's the paradox of education is like, every day forward, we're talking about our students' futures, but we seldom, if possibly never, really sew into our fundamental work of imagining the future, like imagining something that could be more perfect, that could be more diverse, that could have all the wonder and excitement of Wakanda, which was made by two Jewish guys. Like, this is something that we could do in our everyday life for $0 and 0 cents and actually use it to create meaningful results for our kids, ones based on healing and compassion and sharing and collaboration. Like, these are things that we know. Like, the secret is, like, we don't take space and time to do it, but it's so important if we're going to ever achieve it at the same time.
Yeah.
I think with... So one of the differences, right? Like Shuri had a choice of what she could do with her grief. Most of our students aren't so restricted in so many ways that they don't have choices of where this grief goes, right? And so that's where you see that reaction.
Which is perfect for how we do it. What can each LEA, or Board of Education or individual schools or what grants, what things can we do as far as we look at the Afrofuturism part, as far as STEAM, some area might have STEAM. Does the government need to make available more funding for more mental health wellness facilitators, social workers? Do we need to have more teachers? Do we need to have more guided instruction as far as SEL? What can be done? I know it's not from a federal level, that's going to be a state issue. State or it's not even going to be a state issue, it's going to be a local district issue. So what suggestions could we do? We was a superintendent of a district. What would be the number one thing you would do to combat this format, student mental health and wellness?
I'm not sure, but just kind of, I think, kind of staying in theme, like, I think a big part of it is just telling these stories. And it's not just like, it's not just a story of the loss and the trauma that our experience, our students have had, but it's telling, like, again, these future stories, helping the people that can imagine something different, something better, and understanding that it doesn't have to be tied to the pain of the past, to the policies of the past, and we can actually do something and create it and it can be better. Again, like, they created a three-dimensional world of Wakanda in about 2 years using just sketch pads and computers. Like, the reality is, like, we created really a multi-billion dollar producing film that could create years and years of services and support for students in endless ways. And like, what we understand the same way, like, being fortunate enough in the past year to receive a $410,000 grant, I can say, like, the work that we did was imagining a story where our students could have more inclusive education and access to do things like design better computing systems, to, again, create algorithms of healing and compassion, advocacy, to create safer cyber systems. And like, the way that we do this as counselors is we understand the lived experiences of our students, and we can center our students, even the most marginalized, and capture the potential that's being overlooked sometime and elevate that and say, like, these are the parts that, you know, like Sankofa, weren't just left behind, that we're going back to retrieve because they're the most important parts.
I think it's also giving those most impacted voice, right? So we talk about, like, what things could be or how things could look, but how often do we ask, like, our students, what do you want this to look like moving forward? What do you all need moving forward? Or teachers, right? Those most impacted teachers and students, how often are they given voice to really make those decisions?
And so, like, for the, I mean, just really, I think illustrating Caroline's point is, like, they took Black and brown actors to create a rich and dynamic world, but they also took people who had lost a real friend, a real colleague, a real mentor, and had them share their experience on film and create a vibrant world where millions of people felt the loss, even though none of them had probably met Chadwick Boseman.
Glad you brought up Chadwick Boseman, because you saw the tributes throughout the movie, the beginning, near the end, and the final scene of the third act, when Shuri was getting to the acceptance stage of grief, where she was burning her white clothing, and it showed a couple scenes where he walked into her lab and dapping her up. Then Rihanna's "Lift Me Up" plays. That's a strong song. And then the post-credit scene. Spoiler alert, Toussaint is T'Challa Jr. How did I feel about that post-credit?
In all the ways I loved it. You know, like, just to your point too, like, before we even hit the opening credits, like, the grief and loss was told by music, even by Thames just telling us that "No Woman, No Cry." Like, mm-hmm. Like, for those who are listening, like, Haiti is very important when we talk about, like, the colonial African diaspora narrative, because, like, what we understand is, like, Haiti was the first colonized enslaved nation where there was a slavery revolt that was successful. And that actually reshaped most of Western politics moving forward into the 19th and then 20th century from that point on in really distinct ways. And so, like, for this child of T'Challa to be centered in Haiti has a lot of different messages implied in there at the same time. And I will take a bit of a pivot out to say, so T'Challa, one, did not have a storm, but T'Challa, two, could age up and meet any number of storms along his way.
Because we don't know, because we know, before Caroline, I know Caroline ready to jump in, we know, Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, that's what, 3 to 4 years from now? No, 4 or 5 years from now, and state phase 5 and 6, because this movie ended phase 4. Now, I'm at the shot the way it ended with some things. I just thought Wakanda's gonna be destroyed. I went in with that expectation, and it wasn't. It was just a lot of water damage.
and it was fair. And
we got like vibranium dehumidifiers going right now.
Yeah.
ShamWows, they stockpiled in ShamWows because they were actually going to
vibranium. They're good. They're good. And some wetbacks. Some wetbacks also. But yeah, go ahead, Caroline. Go ahead.
I think as this wraps up phase four, I think phase four, my guess is phase four is the setup for Young Avengers. So each of the, you had Kid Loki in Loki, you had Kate Bishop in Hawkeye, you had America Chavez in Multiverse of Madness. You had Scarlet Witch's kids, two kids.
Yeah.
We have now Young T'Challa. So my guess is they're setting up for Young Avengers.
Yeah.
Which would fit with the Storm theory.
Yeah. We're just going to get a younger Storm. We don't know who that is. I'm remembering now. I think Fox still has the character rights until 2025 before they can start reusing those characters, even though they got permission to use Professor X and MOM. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen that yet, they should have seen it by now. It's a year old. So, if you look at Steve, and it dropped something in the chat, which made a lot of sense looking at phase four. Phase four dealt with a lot of grief.
Yeah. Caroline and I were talking about, I think it was like yesterday or over the weekend or something like that. So yeah. I think we give a nod to her on this one.
Oh yeah, phase four was all about grief and obviously, you know, the after effects of the snap. And so Hawkeye dealing with his own grief, Doctor Strange dealing with his grief, Spider-Man dealing with the loss of Iron Man.
And someone else.
Panther. What was that?
And someone else. Spoilers. Spidey's loss.
Aunt May, right?
Yes, that was someone else. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, like, all of them have some sort of pivot to, like, some sort of legacy character, I feel like, or something like that. And I'm, like, that's one part where I was thinking about just going back to your original question as far as, like, the post-credit scenes. Like, or grief in and of itself is one thing, and is like, I think it is, and just to center in on education, like, what are the legacies that we're intentionally building here? Marvel was fortunate enough that they have the convenience of creating characters all around, but, like, at the same point, like, we get our convenience because we get to ideally create 250 to one characters, probably, like, 1 to 500 characters each day. And, like, I don't know, like, it's one of those things where, you know, like, it would be disingenuous not to acknowledge the struggle and toll that the work does, but, like, kind of through that frame, though, it is one of those things that's an exciting gift at any point. Like, we have a chance to have someone to carry on a legacy, to imagine a different universe, to create something that could be different. Like, how are we being intentional with our time to share those experiences and being vulnerable with their own losses sometimes so that they can build from that and recognize those things. That seems like a really exciting challenge that, I'm more excited to continue to navigate at this point.
And how does what we do model for those that come after us, right?
Well, I think it is. I mean, like, it's the Shuri third act, like, modeling it, those pieces where we can go and say, like, yes, I've experienced loss as well, and I'm here to say there's something we can do for it after this that isn't anger or checking out and disassociating or drugs or violence, or, like, you can actually believe, you can thrive, you can just get by, you can be you. Like, all those things are okay, and you can feel the loss at the same time.
Another one we forgot about just came out this year with Thor: Love and Thunder, with the grief of Thor losing Jane Foster, Gore the God Butcher losing his daughter and being reunited with her. touching scene meeting the post credit with that movie, with seeing Heimdall welcoming Jane into Valhalla. So we you look at Shang-Chi also. Shang-Chi dealing with he never fully dealt with the death of his mother, and tried to bargain with his dad in a different sense, in a parallel sense of being a hitman, but never did it. Left China, came back and had to, I guess you could say, they mend it in a way, in a sense there. And that's another part of, I guess, his story that I guess that dealt with that part of the grief with his losing both his parents as well too. You look at She-Hulk, imposter syndrome, losing her job, and she's doing something that pays the bills and stuff, something like that in that sense also too.
I team She-Hulk. I love the show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I didn't like the season finale. I'm just saying
the finale was hilarious. Loved it.
Got one more thing before we move on to we probably might be trying to have a little time for Moon Knight. When we talk the one y'all brought up earlier, DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. I want to deal with the E part of it and the D part, the diversity. But I guess you can deal with all three of them, by the way. We know Marvel pays big bucks for their stars to star in movies.
That's weird.
Yeah, really? That's weird. Yeah.
Really catch on, I think.
Yeah. If you go back to Iron Man, the first Iron Man with Terrence Howard, he made more than Robert Downey Jr. because they didn't know what the success of that movie was, which was huge.
And well, he's also got a lot of hustle and flow.
It's hard out there. Poor pimp. So, Robert Downey, that took his career off, and then every Avengers movie, even Civil War, about $50 million a movie. Chris Hemsworth, 2030.
School counselor.
Scarlett Johansson, made a lot of money. Chadwick Boseman only made $2 million for first Black Panther. Brie Larson made $5 million for Captain Marvel. And Letitia Wright.
What's John Cito making these days? Like, that's what I'm wondering, because Homeboy's been out there since phase one, too. Is he just, walks around and, they just throw money in front of him, pedals at this point?
Yeah. Basically, that's money for Rose Cup. Money shaped this Rose Cup. Money shaped this Rose Cup. Letitia Wright only made $700,000 for this movie. Made $67 million on the opening weekend.
No, I mean, it's, yeah, the reality is, as a counselor, if I had control of it, I can say very clearly that's not okay. And I very much respect him, drawn to films where actors work in solidarity to have a collective bargaining for each other. As an educator, not working with other, not directed in my work with students, but working with other educators, clearly there's a high value for collective bargaining, and how it can create more equitable experiences. At the same point, it's disappointing to hear, and does definitely take away for some of my enthusiasm for the film.
Definitely, I was really surprised by that.
Thank you for
surprised and not surprised.
Yeah, thank you for being a buzzkill for the movie about grief and loss.
Yeah, because I mean, think about. She didn't lose out on the money. Well, she did, but they would have a court paid accordingly. I mean, based on the anticipation of the movie, to be successful, you could have bumped everybody's salary up. Because I think the movie should hit $1 billion by the time we get to Valentine's Day, maybe. So
last film made $1.4 billion. I think they could have found a little bit in the couch cushions to bump it up a little bit. But I don't know. I just talk about futures and feelings.
Yeah, the only other movie made more than that was Endgame, of course. So,
and that's one of those things too. Like when we talk about the work that we do as counselors, and also the work that I would have dreamed and aspired for, the rest of the film crew to do it's not just about equity, equal opportunity and equal outcomes. It's not just about that. It's also how are we creating a sense of belonging? How are we creating a sense where everyone's walking in feels like they are valued and appreciated and an equal member of that team. That's different than the actual like material outcomes. And those are still things that we can do. Intentional planning, intentional programming, intentional advocacy to make sure, because like even if people are included, but getting like 3/4 or 2/3 of a paycheck, like I'm glad that you're here. I celebrate you're here, but there's still so much work to do. And so like one of my challenges, particularly when it comes to the work that we do in the profession, is not just like how we're building inclusion, but like how are we being intentional about centering belonging for everyone at the same time? Because like that doesn't have to be science fiction. That doesn't have to be a dream. Like that's also something that is free dollars and free cents that we can do to really create a remarkable and significant difference in the experience of our students, of our colleagues, of the families that we work with every day. And it's something that we can also codify and lends itself to all those other things like equity that we're working so hard towards every day. Team belonging.
I wanted to see if we could try to get in Moon Knight before we go. That series was early in the year, so it's an 8-episode show. I liked it. I know when the trailer came out, Steve texted me like, "Hey man, you seen the trailer yet? Three fire signs." I think he said three fire signs for that movie. Of course, multiple personalities, DID. What was your? I might be asking y'all to remember a little bit too much, a little bit too far back. But what's your takeaway from that whole series?
I really like this series. Like, my problems with the series that I bumped into was that I was familiar with the character and different storylines already. So many of the plot twists that may have made the series excited were already known to me well before I watched the series. With that being said, parts that I enjoyed, Oscar Isaac can really act in just about anything, and I'm going to watch it and enjoy it. But mostly, like, things I appreciated too was having a like non-Greek, non-Eurocentric mythology being played out before us. I found that to be exciting and interesting. The action sequences were top-notch and different in addition to that. And for something that has been for things like multiple personality disorder, dissociative identity disorder, and how it's been played out and displayed in lots of different media presentations, I felt like as someone who has worked in clinical mental health, they did try and take time and energy to attempt to be more sensitive and more mindful as far as the nuances of it and explain why this is something different, but still have sensitivity to the actual disorder in itself. Those are the parts that I felt. I also enjoyed the chance to see a new diverse character in the final episode as well. Spoilers to anyone who has not watched it.
They had 8 months to watch it, man. They had 8 months.
Yeah, at this point.
I'm not a calendar, I'm a counselor.
Yeah, I liked it. I wasn't familiar with it prior, but I think it was entertaining. I liked the storyline. I liked how they gave the backstory, right, of like his childhood and everything that happened to him. And how those experiences formed who he was now. So it was entertaining. I liked it.
Yeah, I like the twist at the end where we get in the third character, which I'm not shocked by. And he's the avatar. I forgot the guy's name. I can't remember his name, but
Greek Lockley.
Yeah. And he's a total jerk. He was a total jerk throughout the whole show. And I liked it. I loved it. So, but the piggyback of what you said, Steve, Oscar Isaac can't act. He can act to anything. I'm going to watch it. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Rami Malek, in a sense. If you look at him with Rhapsody, No Time to Die. If you haven't seen No Time to Die, it's been a year. It's on Amazon Prime for free. So that was a great movie. I'm not going to spoil anybody, but
I mean, like, also, I got, like, No Time to Die, to take a couple minutes to have a black woman be 007 for a while. I'm here for that. Like, the reality is, like, probably from much of my adolescence behind a Nintendo 64, and before that, yeah, I have a lot of 007 love, and, like, I've taken some time to really acknowledge the problematic parts of the character. I thought they did an interesting job as far as navigating a lot of that space in this most recent Bond film, which helped me to appreciate some of the previous work, reconcile that in different ways. But yeah, I'm hearing from Rami Malek. I think I would have appreciated had they just gone the last step and called him Dr. No in the end. Yeah.
We got Blofeld Inspector. So you saw the cat. You got the parallel right there with the cat. So Thunderball.
That's perfect. Yeah, I mean, like, the place where I'm from, Moon Knight and Miss Marvel and She-Hulk, and, like, it's like, it's the same thing that we do for our students. I know we talked about in the last episode and the episodes before that, whenever we're together, it's like, people bump up as far as these imaginary characters being diverse and being real and three-dimensional, and, like, we can see with billion-dollar films like Wakanda Forever, eventually, and Black Panther, like, there's value to that. There's intrinsic value to that. And, like, we don't have to, and, like, I understand there's been upheaval whenever we see that there are elves with brown skin or Tanagarians that fly giant dragons that are black and blonde. But the reality is, like, people bump up against these imaginary characters thinking that it's so hard, and we understand, like, these create really rich and interesting narratives, and we understand, like, our students who are diverse and in front of us every day and very real humans carry very interesting and very important narratives as well that are just as viable and marketed to many different successes for us in every metric that we measure them.
I don't have nothing else. Do y'all got anything else?
Shout out to any Batman animated series fans out there. November was a tough month, but the show still holds up. Did a rewatch with some children recently, and I think there are some very powerful messages. Like, Kevin Conroy just really told his story over the past year. He published a comic as far as his equal growth as Batman, and how that gave him the courage to come out as a closeted gay man at the same time. I thought that was a really powerful and courageous story for him to tell. As really for someone who's gained so much at this array and was able to empower people in very real and material ways with his story, not Batman's.
Yeah, anything else for us, Caroline, before we get off the air?
Nope. Looking forward to phase 5 MCU. See what's ahead.
Yeah, Quantumania, we do not know what's, we just know they're going to be in somewhere in the multiverse. So that's definitely the one Ant-Man film I'm actually going to watch in the theater. I hate to say that, but that's the one I want to watch. Jonathan Majors. If they had Jonathan Majors, I'm, sign me up for that.
Yeah, like, someone find me his fitness coach, please.
You know, he has a busy next 4 months with the movie just came out. He's a fighter pilot this month, Quantumania, and then Creed 3. So those next 4 months is going to be big for him, and then Loki 2 season 2 next summer. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. We want to see him again, I think, in a different form, of course, because he's, as we know, we had a year to watch Loki. We had a year, spoiler alert, there's a picture of Kang and crop and the TVA. So just at the end, that's all I will say.
And that's really, like, just speaking of John Majors for a second, like, Devotion, which is his film coming out right now, like, Devotion is based off a book which was written by a friend of mine, an author named Adam Makis. We went to college together, and Adam's story is really interesting, and also I think a good illustration for what we as counselors can do with our students at the same time, because, like, Adam, as a high school student, he realized, like, there were all these, like, World War II vets, particularly pilots, that were just all around, and they were just getting older, but they had these very important stories. So he started just interviewing them, and he started publishing them in a newsletter that became a magazine that became, like, a series of like publications after that, including several New York Times bestsellers after that. Like he told a story for an older adult group who's was being overlooked in our everyday thing. And this became this film with Jonathan Majors. And the reality is like, we have students and educators and families that have survived insurmountable circumstances just through daily life. And we can capture those stories and make those transformative experiences for everyone around us. So I think it's great.
Theaters, it's already in theaters. Well, try to catch it. I'll see if I can find the books, probably on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, Apple Library. It's been a great talk, guys. I've been too long. We usually do this in the summer, so
we had to wait for
Wakanda to come out. So appreciate us.
Supply chain disruption. We're back at it right now.
Yeah. I appreciate y'all spending the Tuesday of your Thanksgiving break with me. I appreciate it.
I hope that your break is with people that you care about and that's restorative for both you and all the listeners.
Absolutely. Take care.
Thank you, guys. We'll be right back with my housekeeping items on the Council Connection right after this.
Thanks.
This is the part of the show where I do my housekeeping items. Of course, you can find me on the Twitter at Fabe the PSC, on Facebook, the Council Connection with Fabian Vix. My Weebly page, of course, needs to be updated. Haven't had time to do it, I'm not going to lie. FabeTheCounselor.Weebly.com. Of course, you can follow me on Anchor at Anchor. You can follow on Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, and of course, Apple Podcasts. Of course, we're about to go into the holiday season. Might do one more episode before we go on break. And we'll take a little break from doing some episodes. We've put out a lot of content this year that I'm happy with. And I'm thankful for all the support that you guys have given for listening to this episode. And this show would not be anything without you all. We are still in the top 5 on Feedspot for School Council Podcast. And we thank you for all the support for where we're at right now. And I thank you for that. I just want to continue to drive support and drive counselors to be the better selves as well as myself. I not only do I want to help people become better counselors, I want to become a better counselor myself and do all the things that I can't do all the things I do without support from you all and those that have appeared on my show. I'll be right back with my final thoughts on 1 year after my mom died. Fabe's final thought. Of course, you know, Black Panther just came out. We're recording this on the 15th. Well, I'm recording this part of my final thought on the 15th while I still have thoughts in my head. We'll get, as you heard on the podcast, we talked about all the things that Black Panther has brought in Wakanda forever and how it did a great job attributing to Chadwick Boseman and dealt with a lot of things that we all deal with, and I hope it hits home for some people. And I'm glad you enjoyed it because I did as well. While I watched that movie, not gonna give away if you haven't seen it yet, just dealing with grief and dealing with hurt and all the things you deal with when you lose a loved one. And losing a loved one around the holiday season is one of the toughest things to handle. My wife, of course, lost her stepmom a week before Christmas. I lost my dad the day before Valentine's Day, and I don't look at Valentine's Day the same anymore. And my parents were together for 45, 46 years, and for the way he died was shocking. It was too soon for him to go. But for my mom to die on Thanksgiving Day, a day that a lot of people go home to families to eat great cooking and food and everything, it's one of the great memories of my mom because she showed her love through cooking. And I'm recording this a week and a half before Thanksgiving, and last year's Thanksgiving, I was hurt, I was angry, I was mad, I was questioning, and it's difficult. And where I'm at right now, it still hurts. It sucks. And I have a dry erase board. I'm going to tell a story. I have a dry erase board on my wall across from my desk where I put dates up and things I got to do for the week. I do core curriculum with students. Put all the days on there, even Saturday and Sunday. If the kids have a game, I mark that down. If I had to go to a meeting, or if it's a day off or a PD, or if I got a conference, I'm excited about going. I love to go to conferences and being professionally developed and learning and all those things. I write it on my dry erase board. And I realize I haven't updated my dry erase board in a couple weeks for November. I just haven't had time because, you know, that's one of my self-care things I do. I write. My learning personality is somebody that's, I'm a little bit of all three. I'm auditory. I'm also visual. If I keep writing it down, I'll remember it. Or if I listen to it over and over again, I'll remember it. Or also, if I actually do it, I'll learn it a lot faster. Last year on the episode, we did talk about comparing music to school counseling. You know, talk about how differentiating scales and tying in theories and that type of stuff. Anyway, I'm so used to writing every day down on my dry erase calendar. When it came to doing November, of course, I updated my dry erase board on Monday, which was the 14th. I went through the days and started putting in, I'm middle of November, of course. I put in November and December. Matter of fact, I did my dry erase board last week, so my bad. When I got to the week of Thanksgiving, I skipped over the 24th and the 25th. I did not write those days in the box. I just could not bring myself to writing those days in the box because the 24th is Thanksgiving. The 25th is the day my mom died. The 24th, of course, will be this Thanksgiving. The 25th will be the 1 year anniversary of my mom passing away. I could not write those days on my board. It seems trivial. I just couldn't bring myself to write those days on the board. My dad died, of course. I switched to another school and I got hired and started there a week and a half with my dad. Anniversary of my dad's death. It was tough. Just tough the way he died, just cardiac arrest in the bed and just died. As you know, my mom died. She had contracted COVID in July, late July, August. She was in the hospital for a couple months, embedded pneumonia in the lungs. Couldn't talk to her. They took a phone from her. Then she didn't have a phone. She tried to call me early in the morning. I missed her call. She got released from the hospital. I know I'm retelling the story, but it's cathartic. All my kids, we all FaceTimed her just to check on her. Then she had an episode where she's having an issue with memory or slurring speech. My niece called the hospital, took her to Atlanta Medical Center. And that's when everything started crashing, started getting worse. Found out about a brain tumor, heart murmur, sepsis, tearing her colon, had
had a stroke. So much other stuff ripped through her body from the time she had COVID, and it was shocking because we thought she was going to be okay after COVID, and she's going through some therapy. We're trying to figure out how we're going to work that part out for her to make sure she's going to be fine. And she was in the hospital late October. COVID protocols in the hospital are still strict. One guest per day. She had multiple surgeries. I went to see her. She could not. She didn't recognize me. She called me Tim. And Tim was one of my cousins from Cairo. So the one time my sister would come in and visit from Florida. My aunt who lives up there would visit her. My niece would visit her when she could. She's doing and find out different things was going on for us in the house and those things, and just hoping that she'll come pull through and just don't want her to die at that time. And I remember this like clockwork. If I look at my phone now, if I go back to November last year. Last year, it was the 17th of November. I got a call from my sister saying they had to do a surgery and there's nobody to be my mom because I was the closest person I could get there. So I had to pick up my kids from school early. Working in a different county. And I drove to the hospital, sat in the waiting area for a couple hours. Kids had their books with them. She was in the ICU, had the surgery. Went back there. She was still out of it. That's the way she's been in the hospital because they try to, keep her alive, pretty much, to say the least. And I didn't get a chance to talk to her. Of course, I couldn't talk to her because she'll have her moments where she'll talk, and then moments that she'd be out of it. But just looking at her, I can't do this. I can't lose my parents before they even 70. I just couldn't do it. So I went to get my kids to try to bring them back there to see their grandmother, and they wouldn't let me back in. Like, I just left out 3 seconds ago. My kids want to see my mom. And they wouldn't let me back in. It was past 6, 7 o'clock. For all intents and purposes, that was the last time I saw my mom alive. I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. Didn't get a chance to say I love you. Just didn't get a chance to see her fight through this. It still hurts. Just think about all she's done and all the suffering she's been through, all the things that she's accomplished and the things that she sacrificed for us. Just constantly reminds me of how much of a remarkable woman she was. Now we fast forward to right now, from last year at that time to now with me, how I am doing right now. I'm still hurting. It sucks. I fight through it. I'm dealing with a form of compassion fatigue right now, which is an onset of functioning depression and anxiety. Somebody that everybody sees that he's a great guy, he's funny, he makes everybody laugh, try to make everybody comfortable and blah 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 and stuff. And it's just since the calendar year, all the things I've dealt with this year, even the highlights and stuff, it don't compare to dealing with my mom's death. It don't compare with anything that anybody's dealt with. It really does suck. It doesn't compare. It doesn't bring joy. It doesn't bring my mom back. Because I know they were, both my parents were proud of me for getting my master's in school counseling and want me to go hire my dad. I always talk about when you need a doctor. Baby, when you need a doctor. Like, man, get my doctor, that's too much work. You do it. Did it all day. Go ahead and do it. I'm just... It just hurts thinking about neither one of my parents are going to see my oldest two graduate from college. They're not going to see the youngest two graduate from high school. They're not going to see my dad. My dad and mom are not going to see them get married, see their great grandkids. And it's sad. But these last, like I said, I'm recording this 356 days before after my mom's death, and I'm still grieving. There's nothing wrong with grieving, so you still grieve, you get through it. Go through the stages. Grief is going to do what it do. It's still doing what it's doing. I lost both my parents. It sucks. It hurts. But I'm going to be okay. Despite the different life challenges and even small victories or even big victories or any victory can't bring my parents back. But I gotta still celebrate those victories because they will want me to. I just know that it's still not a good feeling right now just looking on my calendar. Two dates, knowing that I'm not going to see either one of my parents on Thanksgiving again. I want to thank you for listening to a podcast tonight. I want to thank Caroline and Steve for hopping on and geeking out with me. Thank you for listening. I'm out.